New Mexico currently ranks 50th in child well-being, but that reality could shift in the years to come as more than $150 million is about to be pumped every year into early childhood education. Here and Now senior producer Ashley Locke has been looking into this. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Deepa. So all that money is on its way after voters in New Mexico approved a ballot measure this month called Constitutional Amendment 1. It directs money across the state to the youngest learners and the people who care for them. The cash comes from a trust. It's funded by gas and oil revenue. It's unique. And it was first put into place as part of New Mexico's statehood more than 100 years ago. Andrea Serrano is executive director of OLE, a nonprofit for working families, and she's been fighting for this kind of funding for years. She sent in a voice memo from an election night watch party celebrating the win.
This means so much change for New Mexico. This means a path for our children to have quality early education, home visiting, daycare. This means increased wages for early educators.
Now, New Mexico has taken steps to help families during the pandemic. You might recall they are providing free daycare to folks, but that's been temporary. And in the years to come, this new funding stream will be guaranteed.
Thanks, Ashley. Those increased wages we heard about have been a big sticking point to recruiting and keeping people in early education jobs. To tell us what those wages will mean and why they're needed, Serrano connected us with an early educator to share their personal story. Her name is Ivadel Natachu, and she teaches three-year-olds at Child Code Day School in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She joins us. Ivadel, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
Also with us is Ivadel's adult son, Casey Pantea. Casey followed in his mother's footsteps and teaches 4- and 5-year-olds at the same school. Casey, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Ivadel, I'm going to start with you. What does it mean for families in New Mexico that there's going to be millions of dollars set aside for early childhood education?
It's going to really benefit the children. This movement is really something that's going to benefit the generation.
And we should tell listeners that this constitutional amendment is not just free preschool. In fact, we don't know what it will be, but it will be services for birth to five, things like home visiting, as well as access to early education. And one of the things you've been actively involved with is fighting for higher wages for early educators. And just so people understand, how much do you get paid?
Before the pandemic, it was $10 an hour. Now that with the relief monies and all the recognition that we're getting, the funding coming in, I'm making $17 an hour right now.
Which I think kind of comes out at about $34,000 a year. And,
yes.
And that's for full-time work as an early educator. Why do you think teachers need more than that?
Teaching is a stressful job, especially with this age. We're here at their most critical time of development. And so everything's brand new to them. So it gets frustrating. But we also do lots of paperwork to help the child grow, like referrals and lesson plans. I mean, just as a public teacher duties, we also have those. So I feel that with all that, we and our educational levels, we have all different kinds of educational levels. So we do deserve these higher wages.
I mean, I think what many people don't really understand is many early educators do have associate's degrees or bachelor's degrees and even higher. I'm wondering if you can talk about the effect of the low wages on you and your colleagues and your ability to do the work.
Yes, it does affect us. Some of my colleagues have two jobs, so they leave here and they go to an evening job. And I used to have two jobs until my son and I moved in together, but it does affect the living situation. You know, you have to pay one bill at one time and wait for it to pay for another bill. And I think with these low wages, a lot of the teachers really know how to learn how to budget their finances.
We've also heard both in New Mexico and around the country that, you know, many early educators live on the edge of poverty and they rely on public assistance programs. Has that happened to you?
Yes, it has. I had to apply for food stamps So yes, a lot of us have to, you know, apply for the assistance just to get by.
And then I guess if you get a small raise, sometimes that can affect your ability to actually qualify for some of these programs.
Yes, the raises that we get is going to affect our public assistance. But then again, I feel proud that I will be off and, you know, be able to provide for my family without the assistance.
Casey, I'd love to bring you into the conversation. You grew up seeing your mom struggle financially. And now you have two young kids of your own and you're married and you all live together in a house with your mom to save money, as she was just telling us. What inspired you to become a teacher for our very littlest learners, just like your mom, even though you knew growing up how challenging it has been to make ends meet for her?
Well, I think your heart really has to be in it, because if it's not, you know, you wouldn't want to stick around for low wages and, you know, people looking at your career as, you know, just you're just a babysitter. And as I watched her grow up, you know, the enjoyment she had, you know, teaching children and, you know, the stories she brought back. And just growing up, I didn't have a lot of, you know, male positive role models. So, I always looked at her as like, oh, wow. So, you know, once there was an opening at her work, I was quick to jump at it. And it's been 15 years and I've never left. So.
And let's be real, there really aren't many men in early childhood education. But as you mentioned, male role models are really important at a young age. How has it been being, I'm guessing, one of the few men in the field?
Yes, it's funny to see, because, you know, when families do come in to see the center or school, they're like, oh, wow, a male in the classroom, you know, and it just gives it a different feel. And I know I've got a lot of, you know, positive feedback from parents saying, oh, she loves school. Oh, she likes to come. She loves you so much, or he loves you so much. And, you know, the feeling it gives you, it just makes you proud. And knowing that you could be that for a child, that just gives me the rewarding feeling.
But I imagine you've had to make sacrifices to do this kind of work.
Yeah, financially, it was tough at times, you know. Like my mom said, we did have to move in. My wife actually was a early childhood educator as well.
Wow, it really runs in the family.
Yeah, so she did leave because, you know, the low wages, and she loved what she was doing. She didn't want to, but yet we were sitting, you know, wondering what could we do and what can we do. So even before all the pandemic and everything, the relief funds, I was actually thinking about leaving early education to go find something that paid better. But, you know, with all this coming up, it is worth working for with children, when at first we didn't make wages where we could hardly live on, to now we're at least making at least decent, you know. It could be better, but we're happy with what we can get.
I'd love to ask you, Casey, because, you know, we hear statistics like New Mexico ranks, you know, 50th in child well-being, and you're on the front lines. How much of a difference will this ballot measure that has now passed make, do you think, in the well-being of children?
I mean, with all that it comes with, you know, all the benefits they will get, like having outside organizations that can help, you know, early with children that have disabilities, with like delays in their learning, they get, you know, help with all that. So, you know, I know the children will benefit greatly from what's going on now.
Ivadel, you are also a grandmother. You're a mother, you're a grandmother. What do you think parents of young children need right now?
Young children, yes, they do need like a safe place to be, and we do provide that. Even them that are the families that are enrolled in the daycare, they are also facing financial difficulties. So sometimes the kids come and say, I didn't have dinner last night because we didn't have food. So that's where we provide.
And my last question for both of you, there is going to be money coming now to the early childhood field in New Mexico. Where do you want to see that money go? Ivadel?
For sure, we want accountability for this money, and we definitely want it to go to the teachers and to develop programs that will assist children to, you know, to becoming successful in their learning and their growing up.
Casey?
I just hope that it goes to, you know, teachers, because we are in the front lines daily, every day with them. You know, sometimes I know it's hard to believe, but most times we're there more than the parents. You know, they're there with them weekends, after schools. We're there with them all day, you know. So I would like to see it go to teachers, but as well as programs where they, you know, children with any kind of disabilities, delays, or any kind of help families or children would need. That's where I would hope the money would go.
Ivy Del Natachu and her son, Casey Pantea, are both early childhood teachers for 3 to 5 year olds at Child Code Day School in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
After the passage of Constitutional Amendment 1 to fund early childhood education in New Mexico, there are still details to be worked out, and the cash likely won't be doled out until at least next year. But organizers like Andrea Serrano with Olé are hopeful about the changes ahead after this historic election.
We are thrilled. This is a new day for New Mexico. We're the first state in the nation to enshrine early education in our state constitution.